Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, just when you thought Rod Blagojevich was not going to be a topic of discussion, he's back in the news. Of course, this week was his resentencing, and much to his dismay, I'm sure, and his family's, Judge James Zagel decided not to reduce the sentence of the governor from the 14 years that he was given. In fact, the judge simply reaffirmed that sentence. And so we need to know what now, why, and what now. So to get an answer to that question, I go to the city's one of the city's finest criminal defense lawyers, Gal Pasetsky, with Pasetsky and Berliner. He has been fighting for the rights of accused in state and federal courts for so many years now, and he understands when the government has gone wrong. So, Gal, welcome to my podcast. I'll start by asking you, did Judge Zagel get it right or wrong?
Good afternoon, Paul, and thank you for the kind words. I've said it before, I think Judge Zagel got it wrong, and especially now after Rod Blagojevich had years to rehabilitate, I don't think that the judge took it into consideration.
And of course, that's a piece of it. But, you know, one of the questions, and we were on our WGN air on our midday show throughout all of it, and one of the points I made, I'm a lawyer, but I don't practice as you do. So one of the points I made was, you know, judges anticipate that they're going to hear from, in this case, the children of the former governor who talk about how they miss him and the inmates who say what a great teacher he has been. Do judges or should judges care that this is a loving family man, a great father who's greatly missed?
No. To a certain extent, yes, maybe. But I think that's not really a factor that they take heavily into consideration because everybody has a family. And I think Judge Zagel was correct by pointing that out. However, the other conduct that is done after somebody is caught and then after somebody is convicted, the Seventh Circuit has said should be taken into consideration as part of the rehabilitation. In fact, a few years back, judges were not taking, when the Seventh Circuit sent cases back to be resentenced, the Seventh Circuit said, told judges, you have to take into consideration what happened after the sentencing, after you imposed the sentence. Now we're sending it back to you, and you have to take into consideration what did the individual do in order to show remorse, in order to show rehabilitation, because that is part of the sentencing gut in our legal system.
So here, Blagojevich never did, even in his statement in court, as far as I know, we were just getting feeds from the court from our reporters, but as far as I know, he never said then or before, I am guilty of that which I am convicted for, and for that I am home. Right? I don't think he ever said those kinds of words.
He doesn't have to. People who believe that they're not guilty have the right to take that position for the rest of their lives. Simply because a jury said that 12 people said that you are guilty beyond a reasonable doubt does not mean that another 12 would have found him not guilty. Or, in fact, would have split on the decision like it happened to him before. And so it's a very interesting argument, but showing that he is taking responsibility and showing remorse is not always admitting guilt. You can take remorse, you can show that you are taking responsibility, but yet stand firm on the fact that you're not guilty.
And so when he did say, and he did say as part of his statement to the court today, he wishes he could turn the clock back. He, you know, he realizes that he, my words, not his, but essentially, you know, had a lot of bravado, had a lot of faith in himself, and maybe it wasn't deserved, those kinds of comments. Sam Adam, one of his former lawyers, noted that the judge, when he read his decision, read off a piece of paper that he came in the room with, suggesting this was already pre-decided, that maybe the judge was listening, but didn't really care what anybody said. His decision was made up.
I wouldn't doubt that. Unfortunately, I think Judge Zagel made a decision back then, and based on the comments that I've heard and read, the comments that he made did not take into consideration what Rod Blagojevich did post sentencing, and it's unfortunate because I think that may be an issue for an appeal.
Well, you're taking me to an area I wanted to ask you about, the what now, because obviously, you know, he there's been an appeal, right? Although his lawyers have said, well, now we have a final verdict. Now that we've been resentenced after that previous decision, throwing out several of the counts, now we get to go forward with other issues. So do you get to kind of go back for a second and third bite of the apple?
You're only on that issue of resentencing. So the only thing that they're going to be able to re-argue is the fact that the Judge Zagel properly factored in what we call the 3553 factors under the statute, where he has to look at everything, not only the severity of the crime, but also take into consideration rehabilitation, take into consideration whether or not he bettered himself while he is inside. And I think he did.
But here's the thing. His lawyers in their post-sentencing statements said, enough is enough. Blagojevich never took an envelope full of cash. He what he asked for were campaign contributions, and there's nothing wrong with this. So it sounded as though they were going to proceed with an appeal on those underlying legal issues. And what you're saying is kind of what I was thinking, which is, can they do that? Can they proceed with what seem to be arguments that should have been argued before?
No, they can only argue on appeal whatever it was in front of Judge Zagel today. And that's what they're limited to, and the Seventh Circuit is not going to let them relitigate the whole case again. That's not what's before them.
My memory is the Supreme Court had an opportunity to address this, right? They turned it down, and the thought was because they were dealing with the governor of Virginia, Bob McDonald, case where, as far as I know, this guy was given Rolex watches and everything else. The court said, not a problem, let him go. This seems like something the court might want to address. Is there an avenue to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, he tried to appeal to the Supreme Court, and they rejected his appeal. So again, the Seventh Circuit ruled on the substantive issues that were brought up at trial. They rule on the different counts that he was charged with. They reversed a few of them, and they kept a few of them alive, and that's the reason why he was sent back for resentencing. And so if they're going to try to appeal this to the Supreme Court, assuming that the Seventh Circuit is going to deny their appeal or not do whatever they ask them to do, I don't think that there is going to be great success in that.
I wondered, was it unusual for the appellate court in their decision, they basically told Judge Zagel, by the way, that 14 years you gave the guy, not a problem. You could have given him more. Basically, although they were throwing out several counts, telling the judge, the other stuff he's been convicted on, good enough to keep him to those 14 years. Is that unusual for an appellate court to speak back to a trial court in that way, basically almost encouraging him, in my words, to hang with that sentence you gave him?
Well, you know, the appellate court their judges sitting there, and they have opinions of their own, and they will give some type of guidance in different type of cases as to what they believe may or should happen in the future. And so I think when Judge Zagel gave Rod Blagojevich the original sentence, he calculated the guidelines, which of course we all know is what governs the sentencing scheme in federal court. And they're not mandatory, they're advisory only. The judges have to take many other things into consideration. But if you want to advise a client as to what he is, where is he going to start, or she is going to start in the eye of a judge, the guidelines is a very good starting point. And I believe Zagel calculated the guidelines and sentenced him according within that guideline range. He didn't deviate up or down from it. He sentenced him to within a guideline range. So the Seventh Circuit has said in the past that a sentence that is within that range is presumed reasonable. And I think that that's what they were telling the judge in their opinion before, saying, well, even though we're reversing some of them, it is still within that reasonable guideline range, and you can probably be affirmed, and you will probably be affirmed if you sentence him within that range.
In the judge's decision, he talked a lot about deterrence, which is sort of interesting because before the judge's decision, I was saying on our midday show that one of the issues presented for a judge is the notion of deterrence, that sending a message to other politicians. And after all, this is Illinois, so perhaps a message needs to be sent. And then the judge began speaking and talked a fair amount about deterrence. Is Rod Blagojevich paying the price for other politicians in Illinois who may have done something in the past and didn't get caught or may do something in the future or are thinking about it?
I think that there is an issue there with deterrence. Judges always look at deterrence. General deterrence is always something that the government puts in their forefront and in their arguments at sentencing. And judges look at it very – I think that's their go-to argument, general deterrence, especially here in Illinois, like you said. And so, yes, I do think that – Judge Zagel took deterrence very, very seriously because he wanted to say, we are in Illinois here, are not going to take these type of crimes light anymore. There's going to be severe punishments. Was it the right case to do it with? I'm not 100% sure.
So Blagojevich's lawyers, certainly in speaking to the press afterwards, you know, basically said this battle isn't over. Get ready. We're coming back. Appellate court, Seventh Circuit and U.S. Supreme Court. My question to you is, my comments on the air was, I think it's kind of a done deal. I think Rod Blagojevich will now serve 85% of his sentence, which is the federal requirement.
And I think based on what I said before, which is if the judge sentenced him within that reasonable guideline range, which is what the Seventh Circuit is going to look for, then I think it's a done deal. The only way, and I wasn't there in court, the only way that it is not a done deal is that if the appellate court believes that Judge Zagel did not take into consideration the post-sentencing rehabilitation, which is what I would have made the front and center of my argument, not so much the family. Because the family was there when he was originally sentenced to 14 years. Nothing has really changed within the family structure. What has changed is the fact that he is in there, he's teaching other inmates, he is doing good in there, and I think the judge should have taken that a little bit more serious.
Well, let me just for clarification, I will tell you that of course, there were letters submitted by inmates who said lots of great things about the former governor, and the judge did make a comment about that, and his comment was something along the lines of, those people who know him in prison, they don't really know him.
Which, I, with all due respect to Judge Zagel, I think he's a fantastic judge. I don't agree with that statement whatsoever. In fact,
I would say those inmates know him a lot better than Judge Zagel does.
I think so, and I think that you develop relationships in prison that you do not develop with individuals on the outside, and they do know him very, very well in there. And that's the reason why I'm thinking if it's coming back, it's coming back because of these comments.
Did you just get a sense, Gal, that this judge just had it in for this former governor and there was just no change in his mind? It's almost personal.
I don't know. I don't know if Judge Zagel is taking this personal. I think Judge Zagel wants to make an example of a politician here in Illinois, and he had the opportunity to do so with with Rod Blagojevich, unfortunately, who, did have a personality back then that was not very very flamboyant, very in your face, and I can understand if you needed to make an example of somebody, you make an example of somebody like that. Is it right to do so? I don't think so, but he was a very easy target.
And that was the decision. Gal Bosetsky at the law firm of Bosetsky and Berliner. If people want to reach you, your website is pbzlawfirm.com. Do I have that right?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, P as in Pozetsky, and it makes sense, right? B in Berliner. And what's the Z?
An old partner that is no longer with us.
But you kept him in the website. Good for you. That was PBCLawFirm.com. Gal Buzeski, you can also see him frequently on My Politics Tonight show on CLTV at 5:30. Thanks for being with me. I appreciate it. Thanks for the clarification on this case. People are really following it closely. Thanks, Gal.
Thank you, Paul.
I don't think there's any finer theater in Chicago than the Steppenwolf Theater. I realize, if you love other theater companies, you're wait. But the truth is, it's a pretty nationally and internationally recognized leader and innovator on the theater scene. The Steppenwolf Theater is started by some of the most magnificent names that you watch on television, in film. These folks have become just incredible, but I'm not going to tell you about it. We're going to let the artistic director of the Steppenwolf Theater tell you about it, Anna Shapiro. Directs so many shows, by the way, at Steppenwolf. Recently, Mary Page Marlowe, which was an incredible show, written by Terry Letts, a name you probably know. And I can go on and on with her credits on Broadway. She directed, by the way, on Broadway, Larry David's Fish in the Dark. I'd love to spend an hour talking about that. and so many other works by Tracy and others. I want to get right to it. Anna Shapiro, thank you for being with me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you.
You are such an incredible talent. And of course, taking on this role with the Steppenwolf, talk to me about that, because it kind of puts you in some ways creative but administrative, right?
A little
bit different than what your life has been. Why was it time for a change?
Well, there was a combination of things. I mean, I've been connected with Steppenwolf for 20 years. I came in under Martha Levy when we made that artistic director change. So I've been fortunate enough to sit next to her for a long time. And yeah, it's true, in the last few years, I've been doing more freelance work, and it's been really and truly exciting. But, you know, when it came time for her and she decided that she wanted to start to cycle out, it really became clear to me that it was time for me to, you know, step in here and be a part of the next wave of the theater that gave me my whole life. I mean, my whole career started here. If I'm good at what I do, it's because I've been able to work with these actors for so long. And it was just time for me to, you know, give back a little bit to the theater. I mean, if I worked here for the next 50 years, I wouldn't be able to give back to the theater what it's given to me.
And this is such an incredible place. I started off in my intro about saying that there are so many ensemble members who people know, even if they've never been to the Steppenwolf, you can't avoid in life.
That's right. Some
of these incredible people. Let's just rattle off a few of them that people know. I want to start with one of my favorites, because I've interviewed him a few times and I absolutely love him, but John Mahoney.
John Mahoney is just one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. I mean, I've been watching John here at the theater since I was a kid. I think everybody knows him mostly from Frasier. But John is just one of our audience favorites. We get him back here whenever we can. And he is such an amazing human being, such an elegant performer, and truly one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life.
And what I love about him is the fact that, look, he never went Hollywood. He did 11 years of Frasier, absolutely could have become Mr. Hollywood and live in L.A., and he never left Oak Park and Chicago as his home.
That's right, and I think that that's you're getting at something that's pretty spinal to the Steppenwolf Ensemble. I mean, we can go far and wide. We can be in movies. We can be on television shows. We can be on Broadway. But I think every one of us considers Chicago home and Steppenwolf our artistic home. And it's a kind of loyalty that I think gets played out every time our audience interacts with us. They, you know, this is the relationship that's primary for all of us, is our relationship with these Chicago audiences.
We'd never get through all the names, but between John Malkovich and Tracy Letts,
yes,
and
mm-hmm,
Tina Landau and Laurie Metcalf, we could go on forever, and then we'll have no time for the interview. So let's just say, I'll tell people, Google Steppenwolf Theater, members
That's
of
right.
the ensemble, and watch your jaw drop as you see all these people who are and have been. I love that, too. They don't really leave the ensemble. They're with you forever. I mean, we see Laurie Metcalf of Roseanne fame, among other things. You know, there she is on your stage.
Absolutely. She just got nominated for 2 Emmy Awards, and we had her here last month in our new small space at 1700, where she did a play in a space with 80 seats, and she couldn't have been happier.
Love it. Tracy Letts, by the way, I don't want to forget him, an incredible
yes.
playwright and actor, Jim True, on and on. Okay, I'm going to stop because I don't know how I'm going to stop, but it's tough. And so When I think of the Steppenwolf, you know, I think that different theaters in our community play a role. Looking Glass and its innovation, whatever. When I think of Steppenwolf, I think of a director's theater. Mm. It's a home for a director. Victory Gardens, for me, is the home of a writer. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to take that away from you, but is it at least fair to think of Steppenwolf as a director's home?
I think that it is fair to think of it as a place that directors get really good at what they do. I think it's really astute of you. I think that the way that that happens is because when we go into these rooms, these rehearsal rooms, with the list of people that you know so well, what it asks of us, how it makes us rise, how it, you know, the demand for us to be at our best, I can't think of a better place for a director to be. It's funny because, I worked here so much as a young director, and then, you know, people started to think, oh, she knows how to direct plays. I started to think, oh, I know how to direct plays. I'm so magnificent. And then the very next time that I got into a room of people that didn't include the Steppenwolf Acting Company, I thought, uh-oh, so much of what I thought I was doing was what was happening in my partnership with them. Hmm. And so then I had to start to figure out a way to bring what these actors have taught me into every single rehearsal room that I go into. And so in that sense, Steppenwolf is an incredible place for directors because it's just a training ground and it asks the most of you. And these guys, they're the best and they help make you better.
If somebody asked you, what is the mission of the Steppenwolf Theater? And even the origin of the name, which goes back at once about 30 years now. Where tell us, what is the mission?
Well, it's funny. I don't think the origin of the name is hysterical, because I think if you ask half of those guys, you know, back in the day, they would say it was because of the band, and then the other half would say it was because of the book. And it's, you know, they were really young kids back then.
They
so
were high.
They didn't know that they were, you know, embarking on what would be, you know, creating one of the most important theater companies that the United States and the world had ever seen. They picked a name that they loved. But I think now that the mission of Steppenwolf isn't unlike their unstated mission was, I think that we really want to make people's lives fuller. We really believe that theater and storytelling and sitting in a room together helps enhance people's world. It's part of what makes life special. It's part of what creates community. We find these shared stories. We transport people. Those things all, to me and to us, make life better. And it can sound like it's either really reductive or it's highfalutin, but it's what art's supposed to do. What art does, why people choose to make art a part of their life, is because of what it brings into their life.
Yeah.
And Steppenwolf wants to live up to that.
And you do. You surpass it, actually. Once in a while, you'll bring in somebody from, not just outside the ensemble, because you do that, but what I have in mind is the show you directed, and I don't know how to say the name of the show on air, so you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do know.
Yeah, the guy with the hat, the mother with the hat.
Yeah.
And then there's a word in there we're not supposed to say, so people can figure it out. But you brought in Jimmy Smits, and I thought, what a treat. I actually tried to arrange an interview with him over on WGN Radio side when that show was here. What point does a director say, you know what, let's step outside the ensemble, let's bring in a Jimmy Smits?
I think that what we try to do is we also, you know, one of the great things about Steppenwolf is, because of our reputation and because of what we bring to the party, writers of real note want to work with us. And you can't kind of sweep in and say to a writer like Stephen Adlai Gyrgyz, who wrote the play we're talking about,
right,
as well as the play that's on our stages right now, Between Riverside and Crazy, that, you know, we're going to decide who does this. We have to be in conversation, and every once in a while there are roles that just simply don't fit the people that we have. Our company doesn't mind that, because it brings other people into relation with them. And so there's these particular moments where we think this character has this quality, this actor needs to have this quality. In certain cases, it simply has to do with their race or their gender or their age. I mean, just the logistics. We might not have that person. We don't want that to keep us from being able to program a play. And we all feel that way. So Jimmy was a great idea for all of us. We don't really have Jimmy Smits in our company.
Right.
So it ends up being really, really fun. And that's also part of what Steppenwolf's mission is now. I mean, The origin of Steppenwolf is a pretty homogeneous one, and I know you know our history very well. You know, it's a bunch of white kids from downstate Illinois who wanted to put on plays. Well, that homogeneous origin doesn't reflect the company's interests. You know, we want to have a lot of conversations. We want to have a lot of different people in the building, both audience and actors and writers and directors. So a huge part of what we're starting to do is really expand who's in our company so that we can expand those conversations.
Yeah. By the way, I just thought of Gary Sinise.
Come on.
Got to mention him, too. Hey, I want to take a couple of minutes and take a look at the season ahead, because one of the great things about the ensemble, guys like Jan Barford, now you know I've been around a while because I called him Jan, not Ian.
Right on. You've got serious Steppenwolf cred.
You know I do. And I'll tell you who I love dearly is Fran Guinan.
Me too.
They're in some shows coming up, Tim Hopper, Alan Wilder. So talk to me about the new season and what people can expect to see as we begin a new season in 16-17.
Well, great. You know, it's a great segue, because part of what we're trying to do in 16-17 is expand some of these conversations. We've added a couple shows. We want to bring more stories into the building. So we have a few world premieres. You know, Steppenwolf really prides itself on being able to bring new work to the stage and then have that work live forever in the American canon. The first show we're doing is a world premiere by, David Rabe, who is a lion of the American theater, a new play called Visiting Edna, which I'm very excited to direct. And we have company members Jan Barford, K. Todd Freeman, Sally Murphy in that show. And joining us on that is Deb Monk, who theater fans will know. She's an astonishing actress. We're so excited to have her. And Michael Rabe. And this is a beautiful play about what many of us are going through, which is the loss of our parents. And it's also a special show for Steppenwolf, because it's not about an estranged family. It's actually about a family that really loves each other.
That's unusual to see.
It is unusual to see. And the path of losing your parent when there's not that complication, I think, creates a beautiful story for so many of us. I'm so looking forward to that. We have another world premiere by Erica Scheffer. She is this incredible writer. She's done some work with us before. It's called The Fundamentals. Yasin is directing it. He's one of our company members with Alana and Alan. And that takes place in the basement of a boutique hotel in New York, and it's really about the working class and the struggle for them to kind of move up the ladder. We have a Chicago premiere of a play called The Christians, directed by K. Todd Freeman, where we're basically turning the whole theater into a mega church. So that's a really incredible experience. I can't wait for that
He's
one.
He's an incredible actor as well.
Oh, God, he's so great. I've got him all over the season. I'm so happy. Yeah. And then another play called Straight White Men, written and directed by Young Gene Lee. This is a great show for us because it really talks about, can you think of a theater better to house a show called Straight White Men than Steppenwolf Theater? You can't.
Well, you just go back to the original guys.
There you go. So, but it's in conversation with that trope, and we're excited about that. And then Tracy, who we've been talking about a lot today, he's written a new play called Linda Vista, a world premiere directed by Dexter Bullard.
Oh, just because he's won a Pulitzer Prize. Big deal.
Yeah, big deal. And but just because he's about to probably win another one.
Right.
And
who
that
hasn't?
Show has Jan and Tim Hopper in it. And then we are doing a play by Taylor Mack called Here, H-I-H-I-R, which is this great dysfunctional family drama, but it's in this wholly original place. One of the children in the family I don't want to say too much, but we've got somebody coming home from Afghanistan.
Let's just say you're back to your classic dysfunctional family.
Exactly, but for this decade, you know, with one of the kids is transgender. It's and Amy Morton returning to the stage with Fran Guinan.
Wow.
It's awesome. And then this incredible other new play by this wonderful new writer, Antoinette Nwandu, called Passover, featuring John Michael Hill, which is about two young black men on a street corner and basically is about why life is probably different in the United States for young black men than it is for anybody else. And I can't think of a more timely show for our city or our time.
I would invite city council for a special performance.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of stuff to offer, so much that I'm almost out of breath.
And what people may or may not know, there's the downstairs theater, where I've named a couple of seats, by the way.
Right on.
And the upstairs theater, theater, more of a black box theater. But you guys are expanding. There's more coming.
Yes,
you've got the garage next door. There's just so many different pieces to you.
That's right. We've actually opened a small black box theater behind our new bar cafe, and I can't tell you how happy I am that we finally
have a bar. I can't wait to be there. Yeah, I'm coming
in
about a week. Yeah.
You are not going to believe it. You're going to be so happy, except you might be a little mad that it took us so long. So behind that is this incredible purpose-built small black box theater that features all kinds of new programming. I encourage everyone to go onto the website and take a look at our Lookout programming. That's everything from music to spoken word to improv to short runs of plays. It's very exciting.
I want you to come back and join me again because we still have, 1700, the Lookout programming series, youth programming, so many different things that you do. Alexandra Billings, by the way, right? A member of your ensemble who stars in the Transparent Show. Love her.
She's not a member of our ensemble, but we would sure like her to be. She's done several things with us, and we're hoping actually to bring her back into 1700. She has a wonderful cabaret show.
Oh, I'll talk to her.
Great.
We'll make that happen. But so many different things. I have one last question. This has just always been on my mind, so I have to ask this. I'm always amazed, when you think of actors, the people having egos, politicians. To me, if I was a lead in a lot of your shows and I was cast, then I would never want to be somebody who then just showed up for 5 seconds in another show. But people in your ensemble, they're good with that. They might, Al Wilder, he might be the lead in a show, and then the next show, he's in it for 3 minutes.
That's right.
Is that about the ensemble mindset?
I think it is. I think it's about the ensemble mindset, and I also think it's about they understand their role. They understand their life. And also, frankly, sometimes that's really fun. Sometimes it's really fun to just be a part of supporting the night's event. You don't have to carry so much weight, and you still get to be in that conversation with our audiences, but the burden on your shoulders is so much less. So I think that they love to be together. I think they love to be with our audiences, and I think that's the way they get variation in their lives. I mean, unlike most of us whose job is similar every single day, when they have an opportunity to shake it up, they shake it up.
And they do. Steppenwolf Theater is one of, if not the jewel in the crown of Chicago theater. It's just an honor to, because everywhere I travel, people know that theater, and to know that it is here and it is based here, and that everybody comes home again to that theater from John Malkovich on up and down. I keep saying that name because he's just such a huge name, but John Mahoney and the rest. I think it's just amazing, and I congratulate you on being the artistic director as you go forward into this season and seasons coming up afterwards. I didn't have a chance to ask about Larry David. Is he nice?
He's the greatest. Okay. He's super nice. He's super fun. And he's super smart. And he likes to pretend he's a crank, but he's really not.
Yeah, I have to say, I did meet you directed him in Fish in the Dark on Broadway. I did say, I was at a White House Christmas party a couple of years ago. He was there with his daughter.
Yeah.
And I went up to him and I said, Larry, I feel so stupid because I feel like I want to tell you how much I love your work and you got to be sick of that. And he looked at me and said, no, actually, I'm not. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. Who's sick of that? I'm not sick of
that.
Are you sick of it? No.
Anna Spiro, you've worked with some of the best. You are the best. I urge everybody to go to steppenwolftheater.org. It's steppenwolftheater.org.
Yes,
the website.
I think it is steppenwolf.org.
Yeah, it's steppenwolf.org. I want to get that right. And check it out. Check out the new season. Subscribe if you haven't. You'll never go away. I love being involved with you guys, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's always so great to talk to you, and thank you for your support.
We'll do it again.
Okay, dear.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.